Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery. It's going to be a fun show. We're going to talk about the fights that took place this past weekend. UFC 270 was in the house in our hometown. Well, next city over. We're from the mean streets of Santa Ana. This took place in Anaheim. And it was a really, really solid event. Notice I didn't go good, average, poor, great, nothing. I'll just call it solid. I think it did its duty for the first show of the year. And so we'll go over that. Well, I want to spend a lot of time on these two big fights that took place, the UFC heavyweights unifying there on Saturday night, and in the co-main, that rivalry that just won't end between Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. Of course, a little bit of news here and there. Some big fights were signed, so we'll touch on that. And Coach Eric Nixick from Extreme Couture, he'll join us as well. We'll get his thoughts fresh off that first title defense for Team Ngannou. It's MMA Junkie Radio Monday show, January 24th. Goes, I don't know about you, but are you just drained after... After, well, for one, you know, the normal work week and, you know, the pandemic, I think, nips at us, everybody, throughout the week here and there. Just the stuff that you have to read and do, you know, signing up for masks or tests or whatever. But between that and work and then obviously prepping and promoting the big watch along and then Saturday morning, Manchester United, I mean, they just don't make it easy for us as fans. Of course, you had additional duties as producer. We had the watch along. We make bets. We torture our bodies with poor nutrition and alcohol. And then throw in all four divisional games that went down to the wire. Are you just drained at this point?
Yeah, very. You're right, though. It started early in the week because these watch alongs were... It's a big deal that we do here. If you guys haven't tuned in, there's so much fun. They're the night of. You tune in. We are watching the fights. We give you the play-by-play, but we have fun along the way. And all this started earlier in the week because we have our normal duties. But at the same time, we're constantly taking meetings on what we got to do to make this all work with our partners with Panda. And, you know, it's just so much work that went into it. Then the day of, I mean, from 10 a.m. is when it started. I didn't get to bed till about 1:30, but I didn't actually finish my job until 12:45 p.m. I think is when we finally, or a.m. is when we signed off.
Yeah.
And then you wake up the next day, and you're right. Like even these games, man. Like I have no attachment to any of these teams, but I was super emotional with all that, getting into it and. Yeah, dude, it was a rough week. It really was. And yeah, I'm kind of glad it's over.
Cincinnati goes into Tennessee and eliminates them on a last second field goal. The Niners go into Green Bay and eliminate them on a last second field goal. Then the Rams go into Tampa Bay and they have Tom Brady on the other side. And they're up by two touchdowns with 4 minutes left. It's never over with Tom Brady. This guy ties it, and the Rams wind up winning it by three. So, again, in the opposite. And just when you think, okay, Buffalo and KC is going to be good, but someone's going to pull away. They're going to win by 20, 21, you know. No. That game and all the scoring in the last 2 minutes was just something else. I tweeted, this is a cruel game. I say that a lot about MMA because MMA is cruel. But, you know, these guys are uber millionaires and famous, you know, in pro football. You know, most of the team is. In MMA, there's only select fighters. But, boy, my heart is I'm just gutted for Buffalo Bills fans. They scored goes with 13 seconds left, and they lost the game.
I know. I mean, that team obviously is gutted. But Josh Allen, I can't imagine what's going through his head. He has every right to walk into that locker room and just take a sledgehammer to it. What were you guys thinking? What more do you want from me? That defense, man, that you can't let that happen.
What's with secondaries just giving up bombs? Remember that number used to happen with the prevent D? Like, mm-hmm. You might prevent those little ones that chew up clock, and then in the end, you know, you can tighten things up in the red zone a little bit. But no, like, a team's just, you know, we got a minute left, one timeout. We try to play, was dumb. Hey, go long. You know, they're not expecting this. And sure enough, they'll go long and goes. Here's the worst part about it. Guys will be wide open. They'll just catch it and run 80 yards. And I'm like, there's no way Ronnie Lott from the San Francisco 49ers would have let you do that without. I mean, he's going to try and remove your head from your body, you know, and hit you hard if you happen to catch it. But I just don't understand how poor secondaries are. I get that receivers are studs and they're not easy to guard. I get that. And the rules favor them. But, I mean, there was just some that were wide, wide open. Not even like a corner and safety helping out. Just wide open.
Hey, I never got to finish telling you my dumb idea for overtime.
What is it?
I know that probably 7 or 8 out of 10 of you are going to murder me for this. But what if in the NFL, if the overtime rule was this, and it really made you want to have a good kicker, okay? Put the spotlight on special teams. What if you start off at the 30-yard line, okay? And
like college?
Sort of, yeah. Your kicker kicks, right? Then the other team kicks, and you basically go back 5 yards each kick until somebody misses.
Oh, so the D and the O are out of it. This is just field goals.
Field goals. Your kicker comes out. It's almost like penalties, you know? But that makes teams want to invest in their kicker. Kickers get paid more, right? Because you don't want to get stuck in that situation. But think about the drama as each time they move back 5 more. You can even almost make a game of horse out of it. Like,
kind of
first guy that goes, he says, hey, I'm gonna go 50, but if he makes it, the other guy's got to go 50, you know, like that sort of shit. You can even play that kind of game. But I think the drama from something like that would be a lot of fun, because I hate, man, that one team just scores and that's it.
Well, they don't just score. I mean, they have to drive across the field, you know, to do this, and then eventually kick a field goal or score a TD.
But defenses don't exist for some reason in these situations.
Yeah. Look, it's a zany idea. I would watch it like you know how I used to go to Logan's games? Mm-hmm. If the score was tied, and I go, how do they break the ties? And somebody goes, man, that fool goes came up with an idea and they adopted it. I'd probably be okay with high school football doing it. Well, I don't know that I'd want to see it every weekend, but the pro level, it just kind of reminds you of penalties. And the reason they have penalties in soccer is because the players are so exhausted, and they tried going an extra 30. They just had to figure out, okay, we got to move on. We got to do these penalties. You know when it's a tournament format. So we move on and we do the penalties and that's it. Cause calves and thighs, and you know, they just can't handle it, and you only get the 3 substitutions, 5 during COVID. But I won't go, man, that's fucking dumb, pull your head out of your ass, Vato. I'm not gonna say all that. I'm just gonna call it zany, funny, but not in the NFL. But if that's how they want to do it in the Canada XFL? Or Europe, if it comes back, arena, high school, Pop Warner, I'd probably be in.
All right, I'll take that. All right. MMA.
9 minutes in. Let's get to the MMA. Francis Ngannou defended his undisputed title versus Ciryl Gane, the interim champ. So he basically unified that title. The fight went nothing like we thought. If, you know, everybody said, 99% of people said, if it goes 5 rounds, you got to favor Gane. If it ends early, it's because Ngannou knocked him out. Well, Ngannou didn't really get much of any of his heavy artillery. He didn't put much on Gane. Credit to Gane. He's elusive. He knows how to work the range game, the distance game. But at the same time, he wasn't as surgical as we thought. I mean, he touched Ngannou, but he never really put heavy paws on Ngannou and had Ngannou worrying about anything. So the fight does play out. We get to the later rounds, and guess what? Ngannou out-wrestled, out-grappled Ciryl Gane to win the last three rounds and take a 48-47 decision. He won a 48-47 decision across the board against Ciryl Gane. He retains his belt. He reveals to us that he had a completely blown MCL and a little bit of other damage within the knee. And Dana White doesn't put the belt on him. You know, a lot of things happen here for a fight that maybe didn't go as planned for anyone, what we were expecting. But in the end, it was compelling, dude. It went down to round five.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Francis Ngannou won that fight, I think, on just pure guts. He's got to be happy for that. But I'll tell you what, every loss stings, but this one's going to sting Ciryl Gane a little bit more than normal. Because I think when he goes back, he's going to go, holy crap, I was so close. You know, just a couple moves here and there, and I could have walked out the undisputed champion. He just made some tactical errors. And he got tired, you know. Francis really dug deep in this fight. And the thing is, you have to imagine, hopefully if everything gets resolved, at one point, they'll probably do this again. But when are you going to get a Francis Ngannou on a bad wheel, right? Like, we don't know how much that played into this fight. I have to imagine it did. His movement alone. This was your night to win this fight. This was your night to become the undisputed. You are never going to have this opportunity again like this under these conditions. So Ciryl Gane is probably really, really upset with himself.
In my opinion, I think Ciryl Gane was winning the first 90 seconds of round five.
Yeah.
And he looked fresher at that moment. Now, I think what I'm confusing is, especially after we spoke to or heard from Francis Ngannou, I should say, he was lumbering because he was a wounded duck. You know what I mean? So he was giving you the best he had with a tired body, a damaged body from, you know, whatever Ciryl Gane had put on him. And at the same time, the injury that he was carrying, you know, but he did dig deep. And when he was on the ground and Ciryl Gane started going for leg locks, Francis Ngannou said, that ain't happening. Not only did he defend him, he was able to gain that position. That's where he dug deep, because he was the one that wound up winning that scramble, that positioning game, getting on top and then combining riding time with a little bit of damage, scoring, and basically securing the round. Because even though Gane won the first 90 seconds, it's not like he jacked them up or nothing like that. He was just, you know, touching, and scoring points, and that pendulum was just leaning towards Gane. But Francis Ngannou clearly won the rounds. I do want to correct myself on one thing, though. It was 248-47s and 149-46. Sal D'Amato scored at 49-46 for Ngannou. So if Ciryl Gane wins round five, he doesn't win it on Sal D'Amato's scorecard, but he wins it on Ron McCarthy's. And who was the other one? The other one was Derek Cleary's, which is good enough. You know, as long as you win two of them, you win it. And Ciryl Gane really, really had a chance. I think if he doesn't go for those leg locks and he, you know, secures the top position, I mean, we're assuming that he would have stayed there, you know, and we can't doubt that Francis Ngannou may not have been able to sweep him or just, you know, get back up to his feet. So that's the part where we can't say, well, this would have happened, that would have happened, or whatever. We don't know that. But either way, the fight played out the way it did, and Francis Ngannou, not at 100%, keeps his title against the guy that was undefeated. That's a massive win for him.
Huge win, man. I mean, overall, that card, the last two fights, I don't know how to describe them because they weren't really like barn burners, but they just made things interesting. You know, the way the fight played out, it definitely wasn't the type of fight that I was expecting to watch, but in the end, I was happy.
Yeah, agreed. Francis, I don't even want to play the game of like, well, what now? What, you know, we know John Jones is a clear, obvious number one candidate for each guy. Had Cyril gone, we'd be saying the same, unless, again, Slobberknocker, Nail Biter, you know, fight of the year, we got to run it back. But for the most part, John Jones was going to be fighting the winner. It's Francis Ngannou, but I think Francis Ngannou will probably have to get his knee looked at and then reassess, and then we'll see. And then both guys, not just John Jones and not just Francis Ngannou, both guys have to come to terms with the UFC. So really, to sit here and go, you know, the winner of this fight or that fight, I'm not even going to worry about it right now.
Yeah, there's no sense in going through all that. I mean, this is, look, man, I mean, we're going to talk to Eric Nixick and maybe we'll get some more information from him. But honestly, I feel like this is something that has to happen. If you're the UFC, it's a terrible look for your heavyweight champion, who's supposed to be the baddest man on the planet, to just walk away and do something else. Like, that can't sit right, especially with as many stars as you're losing. At the same time, I understand their position. Like, we don't know what Francis is asking for, but he strikes me as a level-headed dude. And even if you do sign him, you got to hope you can come to terms with John Jones too. So this is a really real big pickle. You know, this is one of those moments that might define the situation between fighter and the UFC. Like, if Francis Ngannou can really, like, he's kind of struck at the right time, he might change a little bit of that fighter pay, because that never stays secret and other fighters find out about it. And it just might be that first domino.
He got $600,000 for the title defense. Cyril Gane got $500,000. The salaries are on MMA Junkie. Davison Figueiredo got 150 and Brandon Moreno got 200. However, Brandon Moreno, Cyril Gane, and Francis Ngannou will all get pay-per-view cuts. Different, whatever they negotiate is up to them, but they'll all get pay-per-view cuts because they were all champions of some sort. Remember, Cyril Gane was an interim champ going in. All right. Well, actually, I'm getting word goes that Nixick's ready to go. Why don't we get him on right now? The 2020 co-coach of the year and also the general manager of Extreme Couture, which got the 2021 Gym of the Year from MMA Junkie. Let's catch up with him. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes delivering again, hot off the press. It's Eric Nixick, the head coach for Team Ngannou. They're coming off their first successful title defense at UFC 270. They unified the undisputed and interim titles. Francis Ngannou walking away with the decision. Eric, you must still be on a high from that epic win last night.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's nice to get around some family and friends and kind of decompress. So today I stayed in Cali. I drove down to Newport, and it's nice to get around all the family because they drove out from San Diego and some drove out from Vegas. So just a little downtime with the fam. It's been nice.
Eric, this is crazy because, you know, the sport is supposed to be somewhat fun. And I got to imagine the camp. We saw the knee sleeves. We also heard the rumors or the people that were talking about certain rumors. And then he revealed it to us later. But between that, the injury, all the stuff going on with contracts and Dana and Ngannou not getting along, the coaches, you even got reeled into it. Holy cow, man, what a relief it must be that it's all over. His hand is raised, but what was this whole process the last couple of months, man, getting all the way leading up until Saturday when they finally said, you know, Francis Ngannou and still?
If I'm being honest with you guys, man, I was a nervous wreck, you know, and it was I think a lot of the things that my head was telling me was to pull out of the fight. I just didn't like the way the knee injury was and the situation, the opponent that we had with the particular injury that we had. Obviously, we did want to get into some wrestling, but I didn't know how we were going to be able to wrestle without having the cardio the last 3.5 weeks, as well as the stability of the knee. And man, I just got to give all the credit to Francis, dude. Like, that guy's willpower, his mental capacity, what he wanted to do, he just was unwavered the entire camp. And that's from what I saw. I mean, he might have went home and was freaking out as much as I was, but you know, I think when we got together as a team, we just tried to keep our composure and make sure we weren't freaking out for one another. But man, he did an amazing job. And, you know, Coach Dewey Cooper had to take over a lot of the stuff because we basically made Dewey a punching bag for Francis all camp. So yeah, man, it was a tough one for sure.
Did he ever give you the inclination that he was close to pulling out?
Not really. We had kind of that, I mean, come to Jesus moment last Friday before we left. We got word from a second opinion doctor out here in LA that he was adamant that Francis should pull out. He thought that he could ultimately lose, you know, a year and a half to 2 years after a full knee reconstruction if that leg would have gone wrong, something would have gone wrong. And we got that word last Friday. We had practice that day, so we all met at the PI, and that's kind of when I just said, like, dude, what are we doing here, man? Like, I love you, bro. You're my brother. But I got to, as your coach, I do have to tell you what I think is right. And this is what I feel is right in this situation. But if you, as the fighter, say that you're going to fight, I'm going to have your back 110%, but I can't live with myself without telling you how I truly feel. This isn't about anything other than your safety and, you know, your legacy, in my opinion. So we agreed upon what we were going to do was we're going to come to California fight week. We were going to meet with the doctor out here in LA. The moment we landed, we actually went right to his office and basically waited outside, and he came out, and I could tell by his face. I'm like, oh, we're fighting. So once we knew that, man, I didn't bring his knee up once. I didn't say anything about it. I don't want to talk about it anymore, because that's, as far as I'm concerned, is behind us. We're going to fight with what we got.
Eric, if I want to, I guess, parallel football, you guys tried the passing game in rounds 1 and 2, and it wasn't going as well as it has in the past. The long bomb, you know, the big right, the vicious left, the uppercut. And then you guys started running the ball. You turned to wrestling and jiu-jitsu and just an overall grappling game. Dare I say, even, like, you know, using the clock to your advantage, being on top, impressing the judges with what they give credit for when the fight does hit the ground. But at the same time, that's amazing that you had to default, you know, to like a plan B, a plan C, all that on the fly in a world title fight. What was that like for you to, I guess, see it happen? Maybe not going the way that you wanted it, but then figuring it out.
I think that's the beauty of Francis training as much as he's been training. And I think fine tuning all the nuances of MMA. And like you and I talk about kind of all the time too, George, is like, you need an off speed pitch. You have a fastball, but what's your bailout pitch? What else do you have in your repertoire that you can lean on? And I was so confident in his skill set that I knew at some point, If and when we got to that body lock series, he was able to get this fight to the ground. And, you know, we kind of played with it a little bit, I think, in maybe round one, round two. There were some clinch positions. You know, Usman obviously being in the corner, he you know, his eye for that as well. So we just basically trusted in his instincts. And what happened was, I believe it was the round when gone through the kick and we caught it. And that's when the ground actually started to open up for us. So right away, when I saw Gon's reactions to the ground control, his defensive things, I knew we had something there. And it was actually kind of funny. At the end of round three, I'm walking in the corner and I was putting the stool down, and I looked at Francis and I go, "We got something now, don't we?" And Francis shook his head and he's like, "We sure do." And I was like, "All right, let's get right back to it then." You know, so by being able to score that takedown in round three, I really wanted a lot of level change motion, because I knew that the level changes now had some validity. He had to worry about getting taken down. So that should open up some more of our strikes, meaning the overhand or the level change feints to overhands, as well as, again, our ground game stuff. So we got right back to it in round four. And then obviously in round five, there was that sequence with the sweep. But we knew that. We knew that if we can keep him on the ground, that we had a path to victory then.
You know, in between the rounds, you've been getting a lot of credit for the way you spoke to your fighter, whether it was giving technical advice or sometimes just communicating with them and keeping them calm. actually maybe even relaxing him by taking the pressure off, you know, like I'm not saying like joking or anything, but just like, hey, it's just another night, you know, and making sure that he knew that, hey, you're still in the ball game or whatever. What I want to know is when he sits down, how do you determine, you know, when you just need to talk to him and say, hey, man, we're having fun, aren't we? And, you know, and then there's other times where you're actually giving, you know, technical advice, like combos that you want him to throw or whatever.
You know, that's a really good question, George. And I think it's just kind of a flow or knowing what you might need to say or a feel. You know, I like to think as ourselves in the corner, like a conductor to an orchestra. You know, you really know when you need to bring in the brass or the woodwinds or what instrument, where it needs to be there to make the song complete. So, yeah, sometimes, you know, I do have a lighter approach to kind of lighten the mood, maybe deflect some of that. And then, you know, obviously there's times where you see me getting guys' asses because I need that. I need something out of them. So for me, I think I kind of picked that up a little bit more as the fight went on, especially for the championship rounds, because I knew what was at stake. And definitely in round five, I think I was a little bit more stern with him. But I also wanted to reinforce that with the belief that I truly believe in you, man. You know, you've been through so much in your life that this is nothing to you. So I know that we can get through this obstacle, and just giving him that self-belief back into him. Knowing that we're all here for him and we can get this done together. So, and I felt like it worked.
Eric, sort of along those same grounds, how does it work with Kamaru Usman? I know Francis has been in his corner. He's been in Francis's corner, but is that like, as far as a coach goes, you and Dewey Cooper, how much do you guys need to talk to Kamaru Usman? Like, is he more of a motivational guy, or is he into the game plan and actually giving advice? Like, How do you guys bounce that off as a team together?
Yeah, Kamaru just really comes on fight week, but he's just more, he's really a resource of information. I think an outside eyes perspective, if you will, but coming from the guy who's the pound for pound best fighter in the world. So, you know, he's such a great resource, but really moreover for all of us included in this camp, I mean, he's got this experience that none of us will have, being in these championship fights. So we're able to lean on him more, I think, from more of his experiences from the day-to-days rather than the X's and O's. But we can also go to him and lean on him when it comes to technical things. So we actually did some of the wall work stuff the day of. So like we did our shakeout, Usman came in and we worked some stuff, and then Usman covered some body lock series stuff with Francis that we ended up using in the fight. So having him there is a great resource for all of us. And you can, I mean, we could all learn something from him. So having him there is always a commodity.
You know, on fight night, everybody was just oohing and aahing over Francis's wrestling, a little bit of jiu-jitsu in there as well. But is this something that Francis has always had, and that this is just the right moment that he's been able to show everyone? Or has he really made these like leaps and bounds in between fights?
Oh, he's been making these leaps and bounds. I mean, you guys got to remember too, like we've talked about this in the past. He hasn't had to really show any of this since he's been at Extreme Couture. You know, he comes to every Monday, all my Monday practices and all of Coach Dennis's and Nate's Wednesday wrestling practices. And then he's doing all the cardio sessions on Saturday. So you guys already know the way we tailor our Monday practice. I thought Gon and those guys had a good game plan coming out in round one to try to make him pummel and get heavy on his arms. But you guys, of all people, know the way I run Monday practice. We're built for that shit. Like, that's what we do for those reasons. So we don't get tired and we can push the pace and we can out wrestle you. So we saw it. And I said to him in the corner, I was like, we already know now, but we're going to turn the tides on him, you know? So he's been grinding at this forever, goes. And I think now you were just really able to see what he's capable of doing in his athleticism. But, you know, it's one thing to show it in the room, but it's another to be able to do it live in a fight.
I know that in between rounds, at times fighters have talked about looking across, locking eyes with their opponent, and just kind of sometimes even a smile or something can just really get into a fighter's head. As a coach, you talked about at the end of round one, we kind of expected them to do this. We know what they're going to do. Do you ever lock eyes with the other team or even the other fighter? And do you ever throw off that little smile like, I think I got you here? You know, that was a big chess move.
Of course I do. Yeah, of course I do. So after round three, it took Gon a little while to get up off the mat, and I vocalized that to him. I yelled literally at Francis as I was walking in to drop the stool. I yelled at Francis to look at Gon and say, look how tired this motherfucker is. He can't even get up off the mat, loud enough that they all could hear me say that. So yeah, definitely I do that. And you know, I mean, for me, it's just kind of a chess move, but I want to let them know that I can smell blood in the water and that we're coming.
Man, I didn't hear that. That did the coaches hear it too? Did they react to it, or did Gon, or were you already back turn and going towards your corner?
I literally stood in the middle of the octagon, pointed at Gon, and yelled at Francis. And I go, "Hey, look at him. He's fucking tired. He can't even get up right now." Wow. And Francis is walking over the corner, looked over at him, and Gon was tired. He was walking to the corner nice and slow and drudging over there. And right then and there, I was like, oh, we got something here. I know we got something here. So let's keep breaking his will.
Round five, when most thought it was 2-2 and Gon had started coming out, you know, he had a little bit more activity than the previous rounds. But they get to that position where they were on the ground and he went for, like, it looked like some leg locks, right? How confident were you at that time? I mean, a lot of people will just say, how do you leg lock a tree trunk? But, you know, Gon's a pretty big dude himself. What were you thinking at that time? What were you thinking back at, you know, like when you saw him wrestle? I'm sure you were thinking about his work with, you know, Dennis and Nate and everybody, you know, at Extreme Couture with the wrestling. What about the jiu-jitsu moments and having to defend that? I think he went for a heel hook, knee bar first, and then a heel hook. Has a lot gone into that type of sub-defense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll kind of run the transition through my head again. I remember, I believe Gon went for a single or a double, scored it, and Francis probably should have gone for like a gut wrench in that position to try to go for the sweep. Where I wasn't happy was Francis laid back flat on his back, but right away he went to the left wrist, Gon's right wrist, and started to try to pin for that knee shield. And then it looked like what he was trying to do was kind of like a maybe even set up a triangle or something, but I can see his right leg, that Francis's right leg, kind of try to look for that scissor sweep a little bit. And I'll back up a little bit further. At the beginning of camp, I went over some of the stuff in my head with Francis, sat down and wrote down some notes. And Francis said that the jiu-jitsu coach or somebody over there at MMA Factory used to always comment about Francis's feet, that he had very, very big feet for heel hooks. And he felt that that would be something that they would go after, I think they'll try to go after my legs. So, you know, we started working on some of that defense stuff. It wasn't a lot. I mean, Jake Shields would come in and help and show a couple things, but Francis had a very good idea of how he wanted to defend that. And if it's comfortable for you, there's no reason to try to rewrite the book. So we went right to the defense that he liked. And to be quite fair and transparent, I think Gon made a mistake by going for that leg. It helped us get the sweep, got us on top. And Francis, from there on out, won the fight.
Yeah, most definitely. Did you have any interaction with the other team or with Cyril, you know, off camera that we may not have seen? Are things cool? Are they more heated? Are they the same? How would you regard, I guess, everything now as it come to us, some sort of a conclusion?
I stay true to myself in this whole thing. You know, I'm a respectful guy to the other team and coaches. I try not to get into any of that bullshit. You know, I think Lopez kind of was trying to stir the pot, but looking back, I kind of understand why too. Like, I didn't know that he managed Gon as well. I thought he was just his coach. So him being the manager, I kind of understand how he wants to try to, you know, bring some more eyes and some more notoriety to the fight as well. But I just try to look at it a little bit more empathetic viewpoint, understanding, like, I've been in those positions before where a fighter's left, or, you know, he spent a lot of time, a lot of energy to help build Francis where he's at. And that relationship went awry, I think, because of some of Ferdinand's ego issues, from what Francis says, you know. but that has no bearing on me and him. And I didn't want it to be that way. I just wanted to, you know, have our athletes compete. So I made sure to make it a point to shake his hand. I went over to Cyril, gave him a hug and shook his hand. And then after all the fight was over, we were back in for press. And I saw Coach Lopez and I actually, we had like a nice moment. I gave him a big hug and an embrace. He was emotional. And I wished him the best of luck and told him, you know, I feel that this fight will be probably ran back again in the future. I think Cyril's the real deal, man. He's going to be up in that top three, top four for a long period of time. And we're going to remain the apex predator of that division. So, I definitely see that happening again. And, you know, personally, I just respect our opponents and I respect the other team on the other side. And I got to stay true to myself in those positions.
Did Team Ngannou in any way, Francis, relay this to you or you? You know, I can't remember if it was Embedded or Countdown, but I'm sure you guys have a lot of chill time on fight week because you want to, like, you break a sweat, you eat, you know, and then you relax a little bit. But what about the part where Fernan Lopez did say he's not a good person or something like that, and everyone's going to see that? That, you know, it wasn't like he's an MF-er. There was no curse words or whatever, but I felt like that kind of, you know, I don't know. It had something behind it, you know, like it I don't know. What'd you think of that comment?
I mean, you know, my relationship with Francis, and I've never seen ever anything to stand up to those comments. And yeah. Then, you know, I feel like he kind of that Lopez kind of played himself. And I saw that he, you know, made a comment about Francis's back injury, or like, I know how to break him, or I know this, or I know that, but it was like making it, no, instead of just saying that and leave it, he's like, I know he has lower back problems or this or that, like airing that out. In my mind, I'm like, well, if I'm any fighter fighting for this guy right now, I have to worry about what I say or do around this man, because I could ultimately someday in the same position as Francis, and he's going to try to use that against me, right? Like, I can't tell this guy my deepest, darkest secrets, because he's shown now that he did this to his former fighter. So how can he be trusted? So I was like, oh, this guy just completely played himself by making those comments. You know, he should have just kept his mouth shut, ran the game plan, and done everything he did. But, you know, I think he caused himself more harm than good by some of his actions. But that's just my personal opinion, man. And, man, you guys know me and Francis' relationship. The guy's the real deal. He takes care of me. He takes care of his coaches. He takes care of his family and friends. You know, he's literally the first fighter in the history of Extreme Couture to give the gym back some money for winning the title. He bought us all of our new mats at Extreme Couture. There's not one fighter in the entire lineage of Extreme Couture to ever do that. They just pay their gym dues. This dude takes care of his gym. So to tell me that the guy's a bad person, I think it's bullshit.
Eric, in closing, what did you learn from this fight? They say win or learn. And again, this fight could have been one of those where we might be talking about an L, and then we got to ask you, what did you learn? But I think we can still ask you that because so much happened, but you got the W. But you had to have learned something, right?
I know I learned a lot about Francis's mindset and his willpower, his unwavering, you know, faith in understanding that he can perform in situations that aren't going to be 100%. And, you know, Randy preached this to me when we won the title for the last, I don't know, since March. He's like, Eric, I'm telling you, the hardest fight of this man's career is going to be his first title defense. I'm telling you. You guys got to understand that you're going to see changes. There's going to be money. There's going to be this. There's going to be that. You guys have to stay true to yourself and stay committed to the team, to one another. So that was the biggest thing I took away from this whole fight camp, essentially, was the bond that we have as a team, the way we stuck together and had each other's back. I just think it showed going in round five. That was our moment. And when he won that fight, man, that's where, like, I wanted him to understand that he did this. This was on him. He won this fight, because I sure shit was like, pull out, man. This doesn't look good. Like, we're hurt. We're this, we're that. And he was unrattled, guys, the entire time, man. He knew he can do it. He knew he can win, and he did it.
Eric, so moving forward, let's talk a little timeline. I know you mentioned earlier that the doctor had said, hey, this is kind of a scary situation. Something bad could happen. It seemed like Francis made it out okay, and I don't know if it's too early yet, or do we know that officially, that he did avoid any more serious injury to that knee? And do you know roughly what the timetable would be for him to start training again and possibly take a fight?
So he goes back to the LA doctor tomorrow. He's out here with us still. So he's going to go to the doctor tomorrow. He's going to get it checked out, and we're going to go from there. But it is a fully torn MCL. So in my opinion, I think he needs to get that addressed. I don't know if that's surgery. I don't know how that works, to be honest with the MCL. But I think that we'll get a pretty good answer tomorrow in seeing how they want to approach this thing.
You know, there were so many storylines going out after the fight, and I know you're his coach and you're a very close friend, but at this point, when the fight is over, what relationship do you have as far as moving forward? Like, I know, you know, a lot of people were talking about Dana not being there, Dana not putting the belt, and Francis's relationship with Dana White and the UFC and what they're going to do moving forward. You have other fighters in the UFC. You have other coaches there who coach other fighters that are in the UFC. Like, is it difficult to kind of separate now from what's going to happen afterwards, like Extreme Couture and, hey, this is Francis Ngannou and his manager and what they're talking with the UFC is, you know, I know all that can be kind of a pain in the ass for you as a head coach, but also for the gym. Can you just talk about what your mindset is going forward with all that?
I think, you know, for me, I understand that this is a business, and I try to allow management to handle those kind of things. So I really never try to step across, you know, and stay. I just try to stay in my lane. I do understand that the UFC, you know, essentially they pay a lot of my bills, not them personally, but the fighters that fight for the UFC. So you know, I have to bite my lip on certain things, but I also have to be understanding and in some of their areas as well, as far as a business goes. So, I mean, honestly goes, like, I really think that they're going to get a deal done. I think they're going to figure this thing out. I think they're going to get a deal done. And I think that these guys are going to be able to make a lot of money together, and everybody can be happy at the end of the day. So I don't really like to try to worry too much about all that stuff. I don't understand why Dana did that, but he might have his reasons why. I don't think it looked good, but it is what it is, man.
I'm with you. I believe that this will all play itself out and we will see him in mixed martial arts. But I did want to ask you one boxing question. We've seen Teddy Atlas at Extreme Couture before. He's been there, and he seems to kind of have a liking to Francis when he teaches him things and stuff like that and gives pointers to the other coaches. Has he ever shared his thoughts personally, like what he believes Francis could do in boxing?
I haven't talked to Coach Teddy this camp a lot. He reached out to me a couple times, but nothing about like boxing stuff. It was more just, you know, more about cereal. So, I mean, that's a great resource for me. And I've never really gone to him about that yet, but I definitely will when that time comes. But anytime I get to talk to Coach Teddy, man, it's a wealth of knowledge. So, hopefully I'll get that opportunity to chat with him again and kind of pick his brain about what he thinks would be our best opponent, best approach. But myself and Coach Dewey have some pretty good ideas on what we would do if we boxed.
Well, hopefully he fights in Africa. Hopefully he fights at Allegiant Stadium. This guy's a monster. I think he's everything the UFC's ever wanted. And hopefully they, like Goz said, they just come to the table, each side, you know, gives a little, and we do this thing. You know, John Jones is already talking smack. I'm sure you saw it, even though he deleted it. That's so cute when he does that. But you know, the whole I'll fuck both of these guys, though. I guess it was towards the heavyweight division in general, because these are the top of the heap. Did you see it? Do you have any thoughts? You know,
yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I'm kind of taking Francis's approach to that. Like, He had his opportunity. You know, we were told that was the guy we were going to fight after Stipe, and the guy can't stay out of trouble. I respect his MMA game. I respect where he's at in the pecking order for pound for pound. But the guy can't stay out of trouble, and the guy can't get his shit together. Then why are we still worrying about him? you know? So that in a lot of ways, that kind of got us sidetracked, in my opinion, because we were so focused and driven on getting that John Jones fight that it ended up going to Derek Lewis and then, or, you know, oh, we're going to fight Derek Lewis now. And then we're going to fight Ciryl Gane, you know? So we wasted a lot of time worried about John Jones. I hope that fight does happen. I don't know when, but in my opinion, it's no longer on his timetable. It's on ours.
Your face kind of lit up when I mentioned Allegiant Stadium. You want that too, don't you?
Oh, bro, born and raised in Vegas. That'd be a dream come true, George. Like, dream come true, man. Gave me goosebumps when he said that.
Who do you want on the opposite side of you guys?
Oh, definitely John Jones.
John Jones?
Yep.
You know what else I picture? I don't know how much of a WWF or WWE fan you are or have ever been, but you had to have seen when Bobby Heenan and Andre the Giant came in at the Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. It was like WrestleMania 3. And they had to come on like a gurney or?
No, it was like a mini cart, but it was a ring, right? So they stood.
Because it's a far walk. You know, it's a big stadium, but they sold out the Pontiac Silverdome. May still even be the record for, you know, biggest wrestling event ever or whatever. But it was just kind of something I'll never forget. It was just big Andre the Giant with Bobby Heenan, his manager. So you would be Bobby Heenan because, well, I guess Markell does walk out with you guys, but still, Bobby Heenan was the second biggest figure in Team Andre the Giant that night, which no disrespect to Cooper, Markell, or Kamaru. That's you. You're the head coach. But I could see you guys. I'd love to see you guys coming out on something like that through Allegiant Stadium. That'd be so awesome, man. I mean, I would lose my mind before the fight even starts because this is real fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Kamaru will probably come out like the guy from 300 Xerxes on this big gold throne and getting carried out.
Have you seen what I'm talking about with Andre and Bobby?
Yeah,
Hill?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Oh, yeah. Like, I love pro wrestling. Don't get me wrong. I get that it's, you know, entertainment and scripted and everything. But, you know, you can't help but think that Heenan was saying, don't forget, in the 10th minute, Hulk's going to slam you. You know, like, whereas with you guys, like, you know, this is Roman Coliseum stuff we go through.
Yeah.
You know, and us as fans, us as bettors, us as Extreme Couture guys as well, you know, you're a friend of ours, man, that we love dearly. And I can imagine your heart is pumping as well. But imagine Allegiant Stadium, guys.
Man, unreal. Unreal.
You know, you can actually see through the window and you'll be able to see the strip. And I can't imagine what it would be like to walk out and actually see that, especially for a guy like Eric that's born and raised in Las Vegas. That's pretty amazing, man. For everything from the marquee, walkout, all that, the light from the Luxor. Oh my God, I would lose my mind.
Yeah, man, it would be unreal. It would be definitely a moment that I would cherish for the rest of my life. That's for sure.
You know what I think he owes you, though? I think he owes you to choose the walkout song that night.
Hey, there you go. I can't change God's plan, though, man. That's vibes. Yeah. I love that walkout.
Now I want to go see the Rumble in the Jungle just to kind of get a feel for how that was. Because, again, I think the UFC can go to Africa with Kamaru, Izzy, and Francis. It might be tough to line up all three. Sometimes it's just tough because of where they fight on the calendar, injuries, holdouts, whatever. But at least two of the three will do it. But I just don't see how you don't match boxing history and bring your big gun as well. And, you know, I think that's going to be something else. And he passed a huge test on Saturday, and he dug deep. And all's forgiven. I may take a leg kick for saying this, but I got to do this shit once in a while. But the fight versus Derek Lewis, I was sitting on the edge of my seat, and obviously that one didn't work out.
Yep.
It wasn't the most exciting fight ever. This erases it because he just dug so deep and showed us so many things that are that are beyond power and explosion and, you know, vicious uppercuts. He's given us plenty of that, you know, but this showed us just how complete he was up here and up here. We know the physical. I see him walk in at 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Yeah. And I'm just in awe. You know, it's like a Greek god's walking through. I've seen all that. I can see, you know, him and like three, Ige and two other guys trying to beat him up. They can't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Punching the jackass guys, making people fly across the room. I've seen all that. But this and this, that was awesome to see on Saturday, to dig deep. And all of you guys get credit for that.
yeah, I think it's one of those fights that define your legacy. You know, we need those moments, and we need the moments where, you know, maybe it's not going our way and we have to change some things up, but we have to be, you know, we have to have the skill set to be able to do it. So, I mean, I'm so proud of him, and I'm so proud of the work he's put in, because without that, you know, we're chasing this dude around the cage and missing punches and getting outstruck, you know, with this pitter pat volume. And we end up losing a decision that probably doesn't look great, but he's able to dig deep and find the wherewithal to score those takedowns, and, you know, worked hard on his ground game and kept him there and suffocated the man. So I think it's something now other people are going to have to worry about, especially seeing what Francis is able to do, that we can do both. We can knock you out, and we can put you on your back.
For sure. Man, thank you so much for talking with us the day after the fight. We're only 24 hours removed from what's probably one of your biggest moments as well. So congrats on that. By the way, a message to the rest of Team Nick Sick at home. You got to up your game, man. That I saw that charcuterie. These guys are cavemen. These guys are savages. There should have been like pounds of meat, you know,
and
pastas and stuff like that. So I know what you were feeling. I'm glad you checked them.
They did me right. My niece ended up getting some Postmates Jack in the Box order through. So when they showed up with that,
this is a guy
stuff
that can put away $25 worth in a Roberto's Mexican food drive through. You cannot be giving them grapes and cheese after a big fight like that.
I was so disappointed, man. I was so disappointed.
I don't want to get you in trouble. In the end, they're the bosses. Thanks, Eric, for the time, man. We love you, buddy. Thanks for the time here on Junkie Radio.
Always, brother. Love you guys too, and you know, thanks for all the support, man. I feel it, man. I know you guys are always there for me, so I appreciate you.
Thank you. Awesome. All right, enjoy your evening. Take care.
All right, boys. Later.
See you, dude. Don't you wish you were there with him? He's right on the beach, just sipping a beer on the patio. Oh my god, I was so envious.
You could almost smell that air, right?
He was in Newport Beach, yeah, and he kind of cleared a few things up. For one, we'll get our answer. I mean, I don't know how quick they'll be to share this, but what do you say? Francis tomorrow or the day after is going to go see a doctor in LA and reconvene with the second opinion doctor, right?
Right. Yeah. We got to figure out, you know, what actually happened during that fight. But, you know, he seemed fine. He seemed fine at the press conference. He seemed fine after the fight. So I have to imagine it's probably the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll know soon, but I'm glad him and Ferdinand had that one moment that he talked about. Hey, look, you know, let's squash at least for now whatever happened. You all aired it out. The fight occurred. Get back on the plane knowing that, you know, we're all some decent people here and we'll probably see each other down the road. I was happy to hear that happened. See, some people goes, and I'm not saying Eric's one of them, but a lot of people just don't like drama and conflict, and somehow they have to find some resolution. So at least talking that out or shaking someone's hand, you know, you can just move on from all that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. All right. How about Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueroa? Davison Figueroa is the new UFC flyweight champion. He's now a two-time champion, and he's now 1-1-1 versus Brandon Moreno. Well, they're going to have a fourth fight because this rivalry hasn't been settled because of the draw. And, yeah, of course, Figueroa first said, hey, I'll do it in Mexico. I was happy to hear that. I thought maybe he's trying to win back some fans, or maybe he just realizes that before his career's over, he'd like to hit, you know, a lot of the great, you know, compete in a lot of the great combat sports cities. Who knows? Now, in the post-fight show, he kind of cleared up that his team's actually angling for him to do it in Brazil. So that's some of the latest. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I think, you know, the question is, how soon would you want to do something like that? Like, I don't think people want to see this again right away.
No.
It merits it because it was a close fight. You know, they've both won one apiece. So you can make the argument for it, but it just doesn't make sense right now what you do to the rest of the division. And I think if you're Brandon Moreno, you preparing for somebody else, fighting someone else, that should clear your head a little bit, you know, from all this. You've been training for the same guy, man, for like 2 years now. So I think that would be best, but that carrot that they dangled, Mexico, I mean, that would be that would be a dream for the UFC. The question is, we just don't know if that's even possible to do something like that right now. Like, even Brazil is kind of tough, but Mexico would be incredible, but I think it would be really hard to pull off right now. So I would say you roll the dice if you're the UFC, get them a different matchup, and then yeah, try and make that fourth fight in Mexico.
Rough night for the UFC. I think their preferred scenario would be Moreno stays champ because he's popular in Mexico. And of the two, I think he has more of that superstar charm. And then Gone because of the contract situation. Although I think Ngannou's got more of the superstar charm. You know, he's just a vicious KO artist who's already on top. And you can take over a whole continent, you know, riding this guy's shoulders. But because of what they're going through, you know, that obviously that's frustrating. Dana White wasn't even there to put the belt on him. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a bit much.
Maybe that was a 1-2 punch. Moreno losing and then Ngannou winning. Maybe he just had enough. I don't know. He always says nothing really bothers him. You know, he's halfway to being a billionaire. I always say that. So he's happy as a clam, but it looked like he was bothered by something.
Well, look, if you're pissed off about it, I mean, so many people are watching. Just put the damn belt around his waist. If you don't want to go to the press conference, that's fine. But eventually, you're going to get asked these questions. You're going to have to answer them eventually, right? But something as easy as just putting the belt around a guy and shaking his hand. Come on, man. You got to do that.
Especially with all them. You know, I was really cool to see Mike Tyson there, Mark Wahlberg, Mario Lopez, the Jackass crew, probably some athletes, you know, all on Wild Card Weekend. That was pretty cool, man. You would just think, do your job. That's your job, is these rough situations, you know, and the guy gets paid 7-8 figures. I think I heard 11 million once. I don't know, a year. So that's your job, you know, and it comes with the territory. Is it a cushy job? Yeah, in a way, you run the show. You're the man. You're the big man on campus. Whatever you say goes. Honestly, it seems like that guy, Ari, really just says, you run this bad boy. You know, it's worth double what we paid for it. So, you know, whatever. I don't know. But I was a little disappointed to not see him put that belt around him. As far as Figueroa versus Moreno, they're going to Brazil in May. It looks like Glover Teixeira, that's some news that we can share. Glover Teixeira will defend against Jiří Procházka in Rio de Janeiro in May. Rumors are that Oliveira, as John Morgan told us in the post-fight show that we did, Charles Oliveira may also be on that card versus Justin Gaethje. Amanda versus Juliana, probably not. Actually, Juliana was asked about that, and she says, no, she's not a big fan of that. And Figueiredo versus the winner of Askarov and Kaikara France, well, that fight's not till March 26th. I don't think that guy's going to want to turn it around. And I just don't think we're going to do Figueiredo and Moreno far. I just really don't. So more than likely, Figueiredo won't be on that fight card. Hell, I don't even know if there is a Mexico card in the works. If there is, that's awesome. You know, I don't know if maybe that fight would have been, I'm sure it would have been way bigger with Moreno as champ. Maybe that was part of Dana White's frustrations. Things just weren't going well for him that night. But I think more of this will come out throughout the week.
There definitely is a Mexico card in the works now. Once that carrot got dangled, man, they'll find a way to make that happen eventually. It's just not happening anytime soon.
But it's bigger with him as champ, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know
either the way, but I think him as champ would have been epic.
But you couldn't, well, I don't know. But he's fighting to get back the belt. You know, like if he had won that fight, it would be him against another name that people just probably aren't that familiar with. You know, yeah. But so I think it is kind of cool.
I just think it would be big as there's three scenarios. Him as champion. Him as a guy who hasn't been champion yet trying to get the gold like he did this past year, or him trying to reclaim being champion because he got defeated. But I think that's the third scenario that they would want. But either way, they're all massive fights, so that's the good thing. They just, you know, they need the division to breathe a little. I mentioned Askarov versus Kaikar France set for March 26th, I believe. There's a fight night. And then Alexander Pantoja, he had an ace up his sleeve, goes. He beat Marino twice. So he probably was next, honestly. And now Marino's no longer there. So he's either got to fight the Brazilian or who knows what. And also, may I say, when Figueiredo fought Brandon Marino, they fought on 3 weeks' notice the first time. You remember when they fought, I think Figueiredo beat Alex Perez and Brandon Marino beat Brandon Royval. And then they go, guess what? They're fighting for the title in 3 weeks, which was ridiculous, honestly. But because they fought great, it looks like a genius move. I guess they could do that, but it's just not that's not the preferred way.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to see that, especially with so much on the line, you know, like I don't think that would be a good idea.
I want to wrap up quickly here because I'm honestly, we had a post-fight show that covered a lot, and I hope you all caught it. It was after our watch-along, John Morgan. I spent some time with him unpacking the card, and we have a lot of content up on Junkie, you know, the front page. If you just scroll down, if you go to our socials, a lot of the links to those stories are there. But you can kind of scroll there and just get an idea through the headlines and the blurbs that accompany that. And you can also go to youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video for all of the, you know, the video coverage of everything that we did this past week. Shout out to the whole team for doing it. But I do want to say this in closing, Michel Pajeda dug deep. I want to see him take the next step. He beat in Andre Filial, who took the fight on two notice and was a gangster, man. He gave it his best. Saeed Nurmagomedov, slick submission of Cody Stamann. My heart's broken for Cody Stamann. But you got to give praise to the winner, Saeed Nurmagomedov. He was slick on the feet, and the submission, the guillotine submission, was nice. And then Michael Morales, we may have a new star out of Ecuador, along with Chito Vera. He defeated Trevlin Giles. That was your main card. Any thoughts, goes, on those fights before we bounce?
Morales is so young, you know, like you can make a star out of a kid like that. The way he fights, he's really entertaining. I feel bad for Cody Stamann too. Nurmagomedov is a killer. He came out there and really took advantage of that situation and struck when he needed to do it. And Pajeda, I mean, that guy's just so much fun to watch. And those guys took it to each other there for a while. Short notice fight, but, you know, it was a good result.
Yeah. All right, folks, look, we'll probably clean some of this up on Thursday. We got to get going, though. Thank you to Eric Nixick for his time. We took a lot of it, 30 minutes, but we covered a lot. And we were so happy and remain happy for him and Team Ngannou and, of course, the Extreme Couture Gym. I got to imagine they're on a high. You know, we probably should have asked them. You know, he already has shared with me and on social media that award meant a lot to them. But this was kind of one of the first chances they got to flex on that award. And they held their ground.
Yeah, it is a good flex to start off the year.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're out of here. Enjoy the, you know, keep it locked on MMA Junkie, I should say. And thank you, as always, for your support here, your support on the watch-alongs. I will be part of the Spinning Back Click crew for this week. Check that out. And then Goz and I will see you on Thursday. Until then, go out there and be a champion.